Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and you are tuned into WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going to walk the street.
Can I get mad?
Oh, no.
Turn around.
Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
All right, now, this ain't Roach Brown, but this is Nikechi Taifa, Roach Brown's co-host, and I'm just thrilled today to be in the front seat today. Roach and Martine are taking care of a family emergency, and so they asked me to step up, which I have done, and I am just so very thrilled to interview today two of my most favorite people in this city and in this country and in the world, okay? Dr. Salim and Dr. Ivy Hilton. And first of all, I'll say, how y'all doing?
Oh, girl, if it got any better, I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
Ditto.
Well, I want to tell the WPFW listening audience just a little bit about this power couple, one of whom I've known since junior high school, okay? And the other is just made marks all across the city. We're going to start with Salim. We're talking about someone who is one of America's leading youth development experts. Over 40 years of experience as a community organizer, as a human development trainer, as a program developer, as a motivational speaker. Salim Hilton has served as director of many human services programs, and he has positively impacted the lives of thousands of young people in the eastern region of the U.S., as well as the U.S. Virgin Islands. Brother Salim served as a chief of alternative detention for the Youth Services Administration in the District of Columbia, responsible for administering the Juvenile Youth Transitional Program and Ankle Monitoring System. And in 2000, Brother Salim became a nationally certified restorative justice trainer and later served as the barge expert for the District of Columbia. And since that time, he has become a leading internationally recognized restorative community justice trainer. He is the founder of Youth and Families in Crisis, LLC, and currently serves as a principal emeritus consultant. And I have much more to say about Salim, including his direct connection to WPFW FM radio. Before I do that, I want to introduce his illustrious wife, Dr. Ivy Shadia. I don't know if I pronounce it right. I just always see it in print. Hilton. She is director and CEO of Youth and Families in Crisis, LLC, with over 35 years of experience in clinical social work, management consulting, quality improvement, and life transformation. She is a past president of the National Association of Social Workers, licensed clinical therapist, author, professional development trainer, program development specialist, human systems services engineer, and a retreat facilitator. In fact, she facilitated one of my retreats back in the day. Ivy has served as clinical consultant and interim CEO for several Department of Mental Health Core Services agencies in D.C. She serves as lead consultant and chief instructor for the D.C. Superior Court Social Services Division Balanced Restorative Justice Training Institute and dedicated to the mental health, serenity, inner peace, and total transformation of youth, families, and professionals that serve them. He has served on the Council of Sages for the National Association of Black Social Workers, Academy for African-Centered Social Work Practice. But most of us in D.C. know her as an anointed vocalist and author, a transformational sound healer and messenger. So with that, I just want to bring to the mics Dr. Salim Hilton and Dr. Ivy Hilton, power couple. How y'all doing?
Woo, girl, that was a mouthful.
Well, I tell you, I never heard my bio read back to me like that. That made me put myself on another scope.
Well, Salim, I didn't even really, you know, finish for you because you go back with WPFW a long time. I mean, you were the executive producer for WPFW's Living for the City way back in the day, way back when WPFW was in Chinatown over there on 8th Street. I remember that, my brother. Can you just go back down memory lane like Roach Brown likes to do a lot, just a little bit, and tell a little bit about that Living for the City public affairs program that was part of WPFW.
Well, it was a wonderful experience for me. It was my entree into radio and broadcasting. And I happened to be a community person at the time. I first got my community experience down at the Adams Morgan People Center. And I had a partner named Dr. John Barber, who was finishing up his master's degree at Howard University. And so he came in and partnered with me with the culture program we had at Adams Morgan. And we decided that we wanted to produce a radio show. And so I served as the executive producer at the time, and he was the talk show host. And then in about 5 years, we did that. And then he moved on, and I became the producer and the talk show host for the last 5 years of our tenure there. But I had an offer in Kichi to run a program in St. Croix in Virgin Islands. And so I always wanted to live in paradise. And it was an offer that I couldn't refuse. So I had to sign off on PFW. And I'm going to tell you, that was the most emotional experience that I had, I think, at that stage of my life, because people were just calling in and boo-hooing and telling me they were going to miss me. And it was just a wonderful experience and relationship. I guess I consider myself one of the PFW pioneers.
Oh, I like that. PFW pioneers. That's what I'm talking about. Wow. And, you know, going to Ivy real quick, before we get into restorative justice, which is the topic for today, tell us more about, I mean, you are an internationally acclaimed holistic psychotherapist. You are a sound healing pioneer. And, you know, you also are a relative, I recall hearing, of the great Marian Anderson, who sang at the Washington March, the March on Washington. Tell us about you and the singing, the sound healing, what you're phenomenally known for across the world.
Well, you know, when you asked me that question, it's so funny because what first came to my mind is when I was like 9 and 10 years old, having concerts in my mother's and father's backyard. And my sister reminded me of that, but I've forgotten all about it. She said, I made people pay 5 cents to come into the backyard. I said, oh,
entrepreneur
my
back then.
I've been an entrepreneur ever since I was 10 years old. And I remembered it when she said it. And I've always felt like I could sing opera and I would do these major operas in my backyard. But this was way before I knew our legacy connection to Marian Anderson. I did not know that we were directly related until my first concert recital, and I was 32 years old.
Wow.
So my father and my aunt mentioned it after the concert, and they said, you know, this is your legacy. And I had no idea. My father said, when she sang on the mall, he was 10 years old and they were listening to it on the radio because the only way to DC from where they were was on a horse and buggy.
Whoa.
And it would have taken way too long and it was too dangerous of a ride. So they listened. And do you know, I did not hear that story until I was 32 years old.
Wow, that is absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, Salim, we're going to get to restorative justice. I'm sorry, I got to go on and do that. Because you also have a lifelong career in the performing arts, media, and the like. I know you were the the mover and the shaker behind the legendary Ibex nightclub right on Georgia Avenue. I pass it every time when I'm going home. President of the DC chapter, the Black Music Association. I mean, all of that. Tell us just a little bit about you and your music stuff. We're going to talk about this Salute to Salim later on, so we'll get to that. But tell us about your entree in the Black Music Association and Union Temple. Oh my God, Unifest! You were the mover and shaker behind that legendary event that was held for many years over there in Anacostia, Unifest. So talk to us a little bit. Oh my God, I need to let you talk. But I also remember the group Commitment, the vocal group. You know, Soul, Sound, yeah, Serenade. Go and talk to us about it.
Our slogan was the vocal group who touches the soul.
Ooh.
And that was because of the effect that we had on our audience when we performed, because we profess harmony as really the main ingredient of our act. But going back, I was in high school and I was with a group called the Trojans. And we won a talent show at the Howard Theater, which mm-hmm. really was my kickoff of being interested in being on stage. It just so happens I was drafted for Vietnam just when we received a letter from Motown in Kichi that they wanted to sign us.
Wow.
So I went on off and got involved in the war. And it just so happens in basic training, I was connected with Frankie Lyman of Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers.
Wow.
And he and I used to doo-wop under a tree every morning in basic training. And I got even more interested in harmony.
Uh-huh.
And so just going on in my music venture, I when I was at Adams Morgan, I was standing on the corner one day and this white guy came to me and said, "Hey, would you come upstairs and attend a meeting?" I said, "Sure, why not? I ain't doing nothing but shooting the breeze." And do you know, I don't know what happened. It's like I went into a tunnel or something. And within the next half hour, they gave me a checkbook with $45,000 in the bank and asked me and told me that I was the board treasurer and asked me for a youth development program. I mean, at the drop of the hat, I mean, that was the beginning of Father's Children. I had no interest in running the program at the time, and I had $45,000. So the only thing I could think about based on my background was going to Chuck Levin's and getting a whole lot of instruments and putting them in this warehouse room. And when the kids came in, I said, "Go in there and play." Yeah. And people would not know that the Father's Children were not instrumentalists. They were a singing group that came in there with so much great harmony that they ended up playing instruments, keyboards and drums. And that was the beginning of Father's Children. Now, I know you remember Father's Children. Or do you not?
She might not.
I'm not sure.
Well, anyway, we were...
That was a little bit before our time.
Well, Father's Children blew up and we were doing all these concerts at Crampton Auditorium and a lot of venues. We did a lot of traveling. And later on in life, I joined Union Temple and got involved with their men's chorus. And the early stages of Unifest, they asked me to be the entertainment coordinator. Mm-hmm. So I was entertainment coordinator for close to 20 years for Unifest, bringing in all the national acts. That's when Beyonce was with, what was her child?
Destiny Child.
We brought all of the big time people in there. And so that's a part of my entertainment journey. And I've always told people in BT that I had like a dual career. I had an entertainment career and I had a social justice type career where I did all of the work in the community to help youth and families. But at the same time, I always sung. And then later on, I came off the choir pew one day and the harmony was so terrible. And my friend, Jimmy Dugans, who just passed, bless his soul, I said, "Man, we got to start a singing group." And then Ignatius and I had been doing some things together. And the next thing you know, here comes Commitment. the vocal troupe group who touches the soul. Wow. And that was the last, you know, the main act, last act that we did was at Francis Quest Welding's celebration.
Yes.
And for us, and we were always chosen to do special kind of engagements like that. Mm-hmm. Very meaningful social service, I mean, social justice events. Mm-hmm. And that has led into what I'm doing now. Well, look at this. I was doing a Jazz for Seniors series around D.C., performing with a four-piece band and doing things in wellness centers, senior citizen centers. And I think I got more out of that than anything that I had done. And most of the time, they didn't have money to pay me. Mm-hmm. I would always go to the gig with the band's money in my pocket just in case, because the band didn't want to hear me. I couldn't pay them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, just
you have been instrumental in a lot of different areas, and I understand that you are the person responsible for introducing the concept of restorative justice, the philosophy of restorative justice to DC that's practiced in schools and agencies across the city. Can you speak a little bit about that? How you happen to introduce restorative justice and your work with respect to that. And I want Ivy to chime in as well, because you all kind of do this work together.
Yes, yes. Well, what happened was, by me being the chief of alternative detention at the time, Gail Turner, who was our administrator, sent me to Longmont, Colorado to get 5 days of balance and restorative justice training. And I was so taken by that whole philosophy that I wanted to bring it into D.C., but at the time there were only 3 states that were funded to get that grant, and it came out of Florida Atlantic University. And you remember Leno, who worked for Clinton, I think, at the time, she's the one that put the grant out there for these...
Janet Reno
to get,
oh,
this,
yeah,
to get
Janet,
the grant.
The Attorney General, yes.
Right. And so what happened was a guy in Tallahassee named Dale Landry, he made it possible because I was making so much fuss about D.C. getting this practice and then this training. We made such a noise that they eventually accepted me as a national trainer and sent me off to another state.
Colorado.
No, they sent me up north to Pennsylvania. To get 2 weeks straight of balance and restorative justice training, to be a certified trainer. And that is the beginning of me bringing it back to D.C., getting all the youth programs together. And that was the kickoff of restorative justice in the nation's capital.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to add to that, can I add to that just very briefly?
Please, yes.
When he said he pulled all of the social service, youth development, and mental health agencies together to introduce restorative justice, that was 25 years ago in D.C. And we were able to make a huge impact by, first of all, getting the directors of every agency to buy into it. And we had retreats and meetings, and we've continued to try to educate around restorative justice. And I think almost for 10 or 15 years, we did it with no funding at all in D.C.
Yeah, it was such a passion for bringing the work. And we knew it was so effective dealing with juvenile and criminal justice, because it's really based on providing alternatives to sentencing, to being put in a punitive environment. And that was the moving part in my work, because I had a brother that was always in and out of prison in Keechee. And I always said to myself, he was so brilliant, so talented. If there was something out here for him then, he would have been probably one of the most famous people in the world. So I'm so embedded in that practice that even today, people are calling on us to come out and provide training for their institutions and schools. In fact, we'll be up in a couple of weeks to work with one of the schools in D.C.
I know you have a documentary, The Anatomy of a Life Sentence, Mothers with Sons, and a prison, and I know that it's like a groundbreaking restorative justice initiative centering family reconciliation and emotional liberation. Can you speak to that? And I think you might have a personal story connected with that as well.
Well, yes. My 25 years ago, my son was in college in the state of Georgia, and he unfortunately was involved in a fatal gun accident. In the state of Georgia where he was, it happened on a Friday night, and by Tuesday morning of the next week, he was sentenced to life in prison. And apparently this is something that is going on in Georgia a lot, and a lot of families, particularly Black families, kind of sit back and watch it happen because they were feeling so disempowered. Salim and I went to court. They told us we didn't need to, but we said, oh no, we need to. They said, oh, this is a revocation hearing. It's just, you know, standard procedure. We said, no, we're coming. So when we got there, the hearing was not listed on the court docket. And so we had to go and find where this hearing was taking place. It was not even registered to take place on that day. And when we got there and we walked in, there were cameras everywhere. And the DA had this big picture. And all of a sudden we felt we were like on television dealing with this supposedly revocation hearing. And by the time we finished, the judge had sentenced him to life in prison after giving him three different types of intravenous medications to calm him down, to get to quote, said his attorney, state appointed attorney, to get him through the plea. Then we realized that it was an illegal plea. We fussed about it, and they said, okay, we're going to reverse this and bring him back. There's a court hearing, a court order to reverse this plea. Well, we've been waiting 25 years for them to reverse it. And that is my story. So I had to come up with a plan of my own. It's so interesting because this is when we got our first federal contract with C. Sosa. Court Social for C. Sosa.
C. Sosa Court Services and Offenders Services Agency, something like that. C. Sosa. Go on.
Yes. And so the first group of men that first day had just come back to D.C. Most of them had spent 25 to 30 years in prison. And we had the responsibility of working with them and helping them to reintegrate back into the community. So I found myself on the other side of this with my own son. And they offered me so much support and emotional strength that I said, okay, if I didn't have the skills that I have, I could feel that injustice killing me. And I said, what about these mothers that are out there that have no skills? And then I started finding out it actually was killing them. So I started going out interviewing mothers who had sons in prison. I found this mother in California with a 13-year-old with three life sentences. And nobody died.
13 years old.
I found another mother who, when her son turned 18, he vowed that he was going to move with his father. And he ran away to Richmond, Virginia, moved in with his father, was the driver of a bank robbery. Somebody got killed, and he got life in prison with no parole. And so I'm meeting mothers who didn't want their faces shown. They were feeling so ashamed. And so then I changed it to, I didn't change it. I just embellished it with, I would interview mothers. I would select spas, and I would do the entire interview at a spa while I'm teaching how to deal with the stress, how to deal with the trauma, how to negotiate the criminal in the criminal injustice system. And all of a sudden it became, this is what the anatomy of a life sentence looks like in the families of those who are behind bars.
So, you know, it's interesting. They always say that those closest to the problem are closest to the solution. And then both you and Saleem talked about his brother, have personal stories, okay, that have led you very, very close to the problem. And you all have engineered things to bring you very, very close to the solution. And I know one of those is the organization that you, that Brother Saleem founded, and you're currently the executive director of, Youth and Families in Crisis LLC. Can either of you tell us just a little bit more about this pivotal organization?
Well, I suppose I can. We were riding one day, and I guess I get the credit for founder because of that. And we were just riding somewhere, and I call her Mama Ivy, even though she's my wife. I call her Mama Ivy.
And we co-founders too.
Yeah, we are co-founders. So I said, stop the car. She said, what's wrong? I said, I got it. She said, you got what? I got the name of the company we're going to start. She said, what you mean? Youth and Families in Crisis. And so we decided that it was going to be a profit-making business, and that's when we set it up as a partnership, a LLC. And the rest is history. And I mean, it just came through inspiration. And the journey is proven that it was truly from the universe, what this work we've been doing.
And nationally to date, we haven't counted recently, but I think we have trained almost 3,200 people.
Mm-hmm. In D.C.?
In D.C.
Wow. So was that inspiration for, is this part of the Ma'at Institute for Restorative Justice? Just what is the Ma'at Institute and what is the relationship of that to Youth and Families in Crisis?
So Youth and Families in Crisis, it started off as, you know, I'm a clinician. So we would provide mental health, counseling, support, family intervention, and services to children who were incarcerated and families who were needing to learn to navigate that. And then eventually when restorative justice came along in our lives, we shifted and included in the Ma'at Training Institute so that we could teach others to do what we do.
And I got to say that on the Ma'at, I happened to join some other restorative justice trainers down at the Gullah Geechee community in South Carolina.
Yeah.
And it was a retreat. And the retreat was about how we're going to all work together as national trainers. And here we go again with inspiration. The terminology, I was doing some studying or something down there. And then something came to me about Ma'at. And then when we started researching and Mama Ivy being the kind of researcher that she does, it broke it on down in terms of why it should be Ma'at. And you being an African sister, you know what Ma'at is all about.
Absolutely,
and so we wanted to portray honesty, integrity, truthfulness, and all of the African values that we as a people have lost throughout the years. We thought that we would bring those concepts in our work. And as you know who we are, we always come in cultural attire. In fact, a part of our training, we deal with a lot of culture, information, and what have you. And can I say this, what happened with us in DCBS?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, anyway, it got to a point that the word got out that we were teaching more than restorative justice in Geechee, that we were teaching African. We were given African lessons and history and what
all
have
right.
you.
All right, to me, that's all interconnected.
Well, because that's where restorative justice comes from.
That's where it all started. That's what we found out down in the Gullah Geechee community. They're still living and restorative justice practices, but they just don't call it that.
They don't call it that.
But that was the eye-opener, that we knew it was an African practice. Mm-hmm. And that's how we went about doing it. And that's where my art comes from. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of who we are and the training that we do.
And, you know, and my art is the cosmic order that governs the universe.
Yes.
The natural and spiritual law. Right. It ensures that harmony exists in all realms of life. You know, it's an ancient Kemetic or Egyptian terminology. Mm-hmm. And my art was essential for a good life and a just society.
Mm-hmm. So when you hire us,
I'm going to do a station ID for a moment. Okay, we're listening to Dr. Salim and Dr. Ivy Hilton, experts in one of this country's leaders in criminal and juvenile justice reform and restorative justice. And they are both artists and musicians and the like. So they incorporate it all. You are listening to WPFW FM Pacifica Radio. This is your host, Nkechi Taifa Crossroads, sitting in for the host, none other than the phenomenal Roach Brown and his beautiful wife, Mertine, the model Brown. And they are dealing with a family emergency right now, so I'm sitting in for them. I want you to be free to call in if you wish to join this conversation with Dr. Salim and Dr. Ivy Hilton, 202-588-0893. Be a part of this conversation. And I know we have someone on the line right now, but before I go to the line, I just want to say it really is an honor and a privilege for to be talking with you all. And, you know, Ivy, I just say, you, Denise Volar Barnes, me, we go back to Raybo Junior High School, you know, way back in the day. So, you know, I remember that was during the time when Black Studies was first coming into the schools. And who knew where the three of us would be ending up today. And I know there were many, many more who went to Raybo. And you all, I know you went to Coolidge. I didn't go to Coolidge, but it was all good. So, I just want to ask you a personal thing real quick, if I can, the two of you. You were at Coolidge. Salima, you were at Bell, but you were older. How did y'all meet?
I'm yes.
Because you're so
I'm a few years older.
You want me to tell everything that you do.
No, sure, tell them.
I'll tell you what happened. We were both invited to attend a going away celebration for one of the sisters in our village. And we were both invited to sing for this occasion. And so I pulled up the same time that Ivy pulled up. And Ivy had this great big old sound system in a Mercury Cougar. And I said, my goodness, sister, look, you look like you need some help. She said, I sure could use some help. So it all started. I helped her take that sound system back to the backyard of this house. And actually, it was at Mama Paulette Bell's house.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. And so, yeah. And so after the engagement was over, I did my thing. She did her thing. I said, well, I'll help you back to the car. She said, oh, I love that. And so I took her equipment, put it back in the car, and I said, and it just so happens that it was in October. Uh-huh. And I just say, it wasn't October, it was the end of November, but it was in Libra. So I just happened to say, I said, what's your sign, sister?
Back in the day.
That was the hit on there, right? She says, my birthday happens to be next week on the 2nd. And I said, oh, you're a Libra. I said, do you have plans? She said, as a matter of fact, I don't. And then I said, well, how about dinner? And the rest is history. We went, you may remember there was some brothers had opened up a restaurant down on I Street in Chinatown.
Yes.
And that's where I can't remember what the name of it, but that's where we had our dinner.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful venue.
Yeah, I remember it. I went there a couple of times. I don't know how I forgot that.
That's where we had our dinner. That's where it all started. And like I say, the rest is history.
So that is so beautiful. I love these human interest stories. And before we go to our lines, Salim, I hear that there's some type of a salute to Salim coming up real soon. Can you tell our listening audience a little bit about that? Salute to Salim, honoring your lifelong service. Tell us a little bit about that.
I can humbly talk about it a little bit because it's such an honor to be recognized by your peers and your community. I learned years ago, that's one of the greatest rewards that one can have is to be recognized by their peers and their family. Sure. And so my family, when I mean my children, the board of directors of the African American Music Association, which I started in 92 with the help of three other people, I had decided that I have devoted so much time. Can you imagine doing all these other things and still trying to run that organization? Mm-hmm. So I decided that it was time for me to move on and do some other things. And so it happens to be my birthday, but I officially will be moving on from the AAMA on the 7th of August. Uh-huh. And they're calling it a salute to me for the 50 years that I have contributed to the community. But it's going to be more than that. And you mentioned commitment earlier. I will have Ignatius Mason and another young man named Roger Chapman, and we're going to perform as a new era of commitment, I guess you could say that, whether it be for that gig or we did something at Jimmy Dugan's funeral. So whether it be for that gig or any other, what have you, there will be that. And there's going to be hand dancing, of course. And I just got the word last night that Scooby, who they call Sirius something, we kind of raised Scooby because he came along when we were putting commitment together. He's going to come by and do some songs. Mm-hmm. And so it's just going to be a wonderful evening. I want to personally recognize some of the people who stood by me over the years. And so I'm going to have a jazz band there. Mm-hmm. And it's just to be a wonderful celebration in Keisha.
How can people find out? How can people join it?
Let me give you two phone numbers.
Okay.
One of them is area code 202. Mm-hmm. 306-9292. And the other number is 301-254-1870.
So let me make it just a little bit easier for folk, if that can also. I think that there's an event, right, that's called Salute to Salim, and I think they can go there and find out all about it, as well as those numbers that you gave. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a great idea, and I want to say that whatever proceeds that we can get beyond expenses will go to the AAMA, which is a 501c3 organization.
So at this time, I just want to open it up to the phone lines, 202-588-0893. I think we have a caller on the line right now. Is that caller still there, Cody?
This is Rick calling you long distance from Germany, sis.
All right, Rick from Germany. How are you? Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Salim, Dr. Ivy Hilton?
Well, first of all, I want to say I'm very familiar with Rick because he calls in all the time, and I'm a regular listener. So, hey, Rick, I get to know you.
Yeah, he's like a co-host over here.
then brother,
talk
brother
to Salim, us, Rick.
You know that not only am I a conspiracy theorist, but it is my belief that the Constitution was suspended in 1994 before you had the election of a black president. The Constitution was suspended, in my belief, under Bill Clinton, just after the first World Trade Center bombing and just before the Oklahoma City Federal Building bombing by a white American militia movement member. And I not only do I believe that the Constitution was suspended, but I believe that civil war is on its way there in America. I also believe.
So my brother, I hear you loud and clear. Can you relate that to the topic of restorative justice that we're talking about today? I think you might be able to. So can you relate to
all
these current events?
Heat, under all of the heat that Donald Trump is bringing to the government and the Republicans dominating in government at the moment, how do you plan to get young black boys involved with their families once they leave the prison system?
Well, you know, it's interesting for you to call in and with that kind of question. I'm currently working on a podcast that's on YouTube now, and it's about Come Back to Give Back, whereas we have trained a number of returning citizens in D.C. to give back to their communities. And so we, after our doing this study for such a while, we knew that if we could help transform their lives, they would automatically be able to make a positive contribution to their respective communities. And so that is our way. Everybody has their lane, but that is our lane, is transforming the lives of those who spent long prison sentences to go into their communities and to their families and change the attitudes and their dispositions, so that they can make a positive difference in the community. That's the way that we are going about it. Everybody has to play their part, but we are constantly doing that. And if you would like to go on YouTube and see Come Back to Give Back, you can hear the stories of these returning citizens. While we were training, the stories that they were telling us in the circles while we were running them, they were so fascinating. I was so intrigued by them. I told them 8, 10 years ago, I have to let the world hear some of these stories. And that's what this podcast is about. If you tune into it, that will kind of give you an indication of what it is that we're doing to try to make a difference.
And one of the things that we're doing specifically for families is working with what we call soul justice and the circles of hope and healing. And our whole point is to reach in to families. We prepare them for the return of the citizen that will be returning back into our society from after being incarcerated for any period of time, but more specifically those long periods of time, where we talk to families, where we help them prepare to get resources within the family. And then we identify resources that are outside of the family to help with that transition. And our goal is to start with the family at least 6 months before we know that they're to return. And then there are others that know that their loved one is never going to return, but we still do that kind of intervention to support the family and to support the individual that remains incarcerated. So we have, like, we talk about soul justice because the pain that we witness across the world, particularly here in America, and schools and families and institutions, it is not just systemic, it's spiritual. We're living in a time when policy alone cannot repair what has been broken. So now we have to look and explore the soul.
So, you know, when Vic asked that question, I thought about your program of Soul Justice, Ivy, and I know I was on Facebook and I was reading your Soul Justice Manifesto, and I was thinking about that when he was talking about the ills of society today and the trauma and stuff that's going on. And I just recalled, I said, you have something specific with respect to that. So y'all, you know, you all kind of do it all, and it really is a benefit to what's happening, what's going on in society today. We have another caller on the line. Caller, can you identify yourself? Let us know who you are, where you're calling from, your question or your comment for Dr. Ivy and Dr. Salim Hilton. Oops.
We lost them,
but it's all good. They'll probably be back. But, you know, again, this is Nikechi Taifa sitting in for the host of Crossroads, Roach Brown, who is away on a family emergency right now. And we're talking to the phenomenal couple, Ivy and Salim Hilton, who have been stalwarts in the Washington, D.C. community their entire lives. We're talking about native Washingtonians, y'all. Yes, indeed.
Oh, yeah.
And our caller is back. Caller, let us know who you are, where you're calling from, and your question or comment.
Okay. Good morning, Kichi. Keep doing the good work that you're doing. Mama Ivy, it's always great to hear your voice. This is Papa Wabe, Salim Hilton's first and longtime engineer.
That ain't my Papa Wabe, is it?
That's what he said.
Is that my Papa Wabe, man?
Yeah.
Ever since I knew you were back in the area, man, I've been wanting to get in touch with you, man. So I want you to get my number. Let's talk, man. We got a lot to talk about. A lot of catching up.
We do. And I wanted to say, I'm on every Thursday morning with Free Your Mind, 2 to 5. So we have to let folks know that. But I want to, you know, and Keith, you said power couple. That's for real. Just a little bit about Salim and I. As I said, I was his longtime engineer for Living for the City. I remember when Salim first became a single parent, and I learned so much from him. And when it was my turn to become a single parent, I remember all those lessons and examples that I got from my big brother. I eventually ended up working for a long time in Baltimore in youth advocacy with YAP and doing some other things. Salim didn't say he was a great softball player too, because we had a WPFW softball team back in the day. And I just wanted to say hail up to my big brother and keep doing the work that you're doing, my friend. I do look forward to getting with you so we can do some more things, okay?
Yeah, I hope you can come out on the 7th. But you didn't say that not only was I a great softball player, but I was the home run king, Wabe, remember? That was a Leo statement.
I didn't know WPFW had a softball team.
Oh, yeah. I was the player coach, and it was a wonder. We actually won the championship.
We did.
That was the exciting part of being a part of the PFW family, the softball team.
Yes.
Wow.
And and Kichi, we played against the other radio stations, you know, and it had a nice little league. And it was all of that back in the day, as they say. But just thank you, big brother, for your inspiration over the years and providing a source of mentorship when you didn't even know you was mentoring me, you know?
Well, thank you, Papa. Another great WPFW host. Thank you so very much for calling in, and thank you for all your contributions to the station. I want to let people know that you can hear Brother Salim, Dr. Salim Hilton, again today on WPFW at 5 p.m. with Joni Eisenberg with his daughter, is my understanding. So you're going to be on these airlines again, 5 p.m. Eastern time, with your daughter, with Joni Eisenberg. And with that, we have another caller on the line. Caller, let us know who you are, where you're calling from, and what your question or comment is for Dr. Salim and Dr. Ivy Hilton, the power couple.
Yes, this is Mo calling from Silver Spring, and I was calling to ask how could you volunteer for a program like this? I would like to possibly participate. I've participated in Kairos, but it did not have what I think that is very vital is the slant dealing with African-American folk that are incarcerated. So I can, if you have a contact information that you could provide, I really would like to appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, Salim and Ivy, how can you volunteer? I love those questions.
Well, I'll leave my number, and I'll be very interested in having a conversation with the brother. You can call me.
If you wish, he can leave his information with the engineer, and you can contact him unless you don't mind giving your phone number over the airways. I'm just saying.
If he doesn't mind leaving that number at the station, we'll be sure to get back with him sometime this afternoon.
Yeah, just leave it with the engineer before you hang up, and he'll give us the information, and Avia Saleem will get right back to you. Is that okay?
That's perfect. Thank
you. And also, you can go to my website, which is nsaleemhilton.com. Straight. Nsaleem, S-A-L-E-E-M, Hilton, H-Y-L-T-O-N.com. And that's another way, in case you all don't get the connection while we're on the air.
So it's nsaleem, N.
N Saleem.
S-A-L-E-E-M.
H-Y-L-T-O-N.com. nsaleemhilton.com.
Okay. And I'll leave my number as well.
Yes. Okay, great. Good to talk to you.
Thank you very much, caller. So, Saleem, I know that you've been quoted as saying, I'm quoting, "I am committed to reducing the harm that violent crimes create in our community through restorative practices and cultural enrichment programming that empowers and transforms lives." And Ivy, you've been quoted as saying that, "I know that all of humanity is ready for love, so I give love freely as a path to self-discovery and higher consciousness of the human mind that will last into eternity." So with those two quotes... I'm just curious. What do you say about these quotes, these words of wisdom that you are providing out to the community and to the universe? What do you say about that? Just how does what you say inspire you so that you inspire others as well?
Well, for me, I realize that at the end of the day, no matter who you are, where you come from, what you believe, that love is that attribute that is going to make a difference in this world. I think in a world where disconnection has become normalized, soul justice is where I'm coming from. Reminds us that we are all energetically and emotionally and spiritually interwoven. And it's a vibration of accountability and compassion. And we have to take that responsibility ourselves in order to make that happen, because we are human. We are human. And so we can step outside of love, but we have to remind ourselves that it is where healing meets truth and where truth becomes liberation. And that is love.
And my theory is, Kiki, that, and this is something that just came through me over a month ago. In fact, I even put an article in the Roanoke Tribune down here relative to this. I have this theory that African Americans must first acquire a pure heart. They must embrace the lessons and the spirit of their ancestors. And the major shift is that we need to promote the culture through our image, the things we put on our bodies, and how we conduct ourselves with African, pure African values. We have to have these core values from our ancestors. And if we were to bring that energy out into the world every day, looking like Africans, talking like Africans, behaving like Africans, believe me, it would be a major shift in the universe, especially in the eyes of these people that are destroying our country, that they will see that something drastic is taking place. We have forgotten who we are, and we have to start telling the world who we are with the help of our ancestors. And I read many years ago in the Quran, if you purify your heart, the ancestors will come and work for you. So that's how I look at it. We have to put the image out there. It's not a fad to put on an African shirt or an African dress. That's who we are.
It's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle. And you know, you can relate to what I'm talking about. That's what we as African Americans have to do. We have to embrace that lifestyle.
Absolutely. We have to embrace that lifestyle. Thank you so much for that. If you can remind our listening audience one more time about this salute to Saleem, sponsored by the African American Music Association, and our dear sister Beverly Lindsay. And just how people can connect to that. We just have a few more minutes before we sign off.
Okay, it's going to be at the golf course at Whitmore, which is in Mitchellville. It's going to be on the 7th of August from 5 to 9:30. It's going to be entertainment, food, fun, a lot of stuff going on, and live music, that is. And so we do have, like I say, Scooby is going to come by and do something with us. And it's going to be just a wonderful celebration presented by the African American Music Association, which is the organization that I co-founded in 92. And so this has been a walk of my life. And so it's going to officially be my retirement from the AAMA and to celebrate my 78th birthday.
And I'd like for Celine to give acknowledgement and gratitude to the committee that has been working so hard.
Oh, my God. We have what I call a dream team committee. And you just mentioned one of the dream team members, Beverly Lindsay Johnson. And we have Vernon Hawkins of Union Temple Baptist Church, who I've worked with in Unifest over the years. My daughter, Shandice Hilton, my son, Mahmoud. We have Tasha Fitzgerald of Tasha Productions. And we have I. O'Brien, who also worked with us on Unifest. And everybody are event specialists. And we have come together to put this very special occasion together on my behalf. And I am just so delighted, elated, and excited. And I'd like to see you in the house, Keechee, because it's going
to
be
there. I look forward to joining y'all at the Country Club at Woodmore on August the 7th.
It's literally going to be bringing the village together. People, sure. We don't look at each other much in a good way. It's not going to be a funeral. It's going to be a good time in the village.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, which birthday did you say this was?
I said 78 years old.
Goodness, isn't that
one? See, Ivy's a baby to me.
No, you didn't say that on live TV, on live radio.
So,
well, if she went to school with you, she must be around your. So I just put it.
Yeah,
out
but there, I right? ain't no spring chicken now. I ain't gonna reveal, but we've been around for a minute. Let's just say it like that.
Well, after celebrating 50 years of community work, I must have somewhere like that. So I don't mind. I feel proud to be able to speak like that. Yeah, and in good health.
So we've been listening to the power couple, Dr. Saleem Hilton, Dr. Ivy Hilton, WPFW Pacifica Radio. This has been Crossroads. This is Nkechi Taifa, attorney and counselor at law, sitting in for the great, the illustrious, the phenomenal Roach Brown and his lovely wife, Mertine, who are away on a family emergency right now. Saleem and Ivy, thank you so very much for this interview. When I found out there was going to be Saleem, I said, oh my goodness, this is perfect. Got to bring Ivy in here as well. And it's been great going down memory lane with you. This is WPFW Pacifica Radio. I want to thank our engineer, Cody. Thank you so very much. And thank you for all the people who called in. We got Mo's phone number, and I gave it to you. You all in your chat, and also Papa Wabi left his number. He wants you to call him as well. So I sent that to you all in your chat. So again, thank you so very much, and I'll see you on August 7th. Oh, and also 5 p.m., Saleem will be on WPFW again with Joni Eisenberg and his daughter. So tune in then as well. Peace and blessings to all.
Love your energy.
Peace and blessings, my childhood friend.
Hey.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at wpfwfm.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at wpfwfm.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
African Diaspora International Film Festival, Africa World Now Project, and GWU Africana Studies Program present the 18th Annual African Diaspora International Film Festival DC, August 1st to the 3rd, featuring a film on Walter Rodney, films on Black musical traditions, and more. Receptions and Q&As, ADIFFDC, from August 1st to the 3rd at the GWU Student Center. Tickets and schedule at nyadiff.org or at 212-864-1760. ADIFF, where Black Life Matters. WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
Jazzy Sundays at Anacostia, an 8-week jazz and R&B concert series happening this Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. in the heart of the Anacostia Arts District at 1234 Marion Barry Avenue. Food vendors will be on site and lawn chairs are welcome. Jazzy Sundays in Anacostia runs through Sunday, September the 7th. Details at anacostiabid.org.